Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts on Recovery, speaking to you today from Midtown Atlanta on the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower, overlooking majestic Buckhead in the city of 6 million, which once was a sleepy little town. Now, metropolis of the Southeast. It's a magnificent day, full spring. The pollen has abated a bit, and it is beautiful. Now, folks, today we have a special guest that I'm going to patch in just a few minutes. But before I do, as I so often do, I want to open the program with a prayer that I've written, and this, the name of this prayer is Pruning Leads to Restoration. Father, there was a path that seemed so promising, a road that looked like it was your way, but it was not. There were far too many compromises involved for it to be something you would honor. In the deepest recesses of my heart, I knew it, in spite of all my protestation. I was keenly aware of it, that I was keenly aware it was my will and not yours. Nevertheless, I followed the wrong path, paying a terrible price for having done so. Later, when I had no other recourse available, I came to you, sorrowful, humbled, and crushed, with hat in hand, ready and willing to be changed. This time, instead of medicating my pain with vice, I endured the obligatory heartache for a period, which I was certain was far too long. What you knew was exactly what was required. You promised that if I would humble myself, you would exalt me at the proper time. I didn't believe that was true, not literally. Nor that you would do it, not really. But you have, and I can clearly see your hand in the restoration of my life. Now I stand strong, far wiser and more resilient, with a calm, sane, and joyful countenance, humbling myself because I had no alternative. I never considered that in your wisdom, you had orchestrated my circumstances in a way that I would eventually seek you out. That wasn't the road I would have chosen for myself, but it is the road you have chosen for me. I wish I could say that I've learned all my lessons, but I know who I am. I know that in my heart, I am prone to wander, prone to leave the God I love. Father, take my heart and prevent it from following another fruitless path leading nowhere. Amen. I'm putting Stacy on the line now, who is my cohort down in Florida. Stacy, are you there?
I am.
Well, how are you today? Well, this was this particular prayer that I wrote is one that wasn't all that long ago as far as how I felt about it. But like all of the prayers that I, you know, that I write and that we have available, by the way, Real Prayers for Real People with Real Problems, that McGee and www.mcgeeandme.net website, we got a ton of stuff. But at any rate, I wrote that prayer because I wanted my way. And I wanted God to bless it. I was not interested in his way. I wanted him to do what I wanted him to do. I wanted a relationship that absolutely had more compromises than, you know, than Carter has pills. But I thought that it was exactly what I wanted and needed in life, and I chose to go after it, even knowing. You kind of take in your mind this whole idea, well, I'll do what I want, and God will bless it in the end. That is a lie that almost every Christian I know has believed at one time or another.
I agree.
We all seem to believe it. Pretty amazing. Now, we're waiting for Betty to call, and she's recovering from overeating, and that's an addiction that we don't talk about as much, but it's a huge one.
It sure
in
is.
In some ways, I think it's the hardest. I mean, I understand, you know, because I'm recovering from alcoholism, I understand that. And, you know, it's the answer to that simple. Don't drink. And you do the work, and your life will normalize. And it does for almost everybody that really does the work. But you don't ever drink again. In 1 month, I will pick up a 20-year chip from AA. And that's 20 years alcohol-free. But when it comes to medicating your pain with food, and it becomes an addictive thing, that's harder because you have to eat. And when it comes to alcohol, you just don't drink. When it comes to drugs, you just don't drink. When it comes to pornography, you don't sit in front of the computer and look at dirty pictures. When it comes to, you know, sexual perversion, you don't do it. Some of them are harder than others. I've heard people say that addictions to crystal meth are the hardest in the world to overcome. But that, even more so than cocaine and heroin. And that,
but you know, Jack, sadly, with food, it's more than just eating. Every aspect of our lives, especially as we get older, what do we do for enjoyment? We go out to dinner or we have guests in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
Everything revolves around food. And it's a lot easier access because it's there anyway. You have to eat. And it's very, very difficult. And people look at other people who are overweight and they call them names and they don't really understand the dynamics involved. And there are studies that show that people who suffer from sexual abuse often are overweight. They want to make themselves subconsciously they want to make themselves unattractive. So not only are they gratifying themselves instantly, they're working on keeping unwanted attentions away from them. It's a very complicated
issue. I'll
talk about
that in a minute. When I was in my 20s, and I lived out in California, I was married to a woman who got very depressed, got on the couch, and didn't get off for 2 years. We had three small children, and they would run up to me when I came home from work and say, "Daddy, what's for dinner?" Because I ended up, you know, I'd go home and I'd say, you know, I'd say, "What are we having for dinner?" She said, "Why bother?" And I said, "Because we've got three little girls and they're hungry, so am I." And she said, "You'll just get hungry again." And we'd just shoot that. I mean, it was awful. But that being the case, I started cooking and doing all of it. Now, that depression and all the other things that were involved with it, that, you know, that I really wrote about in my memoir, How My Name Is Jack,
meant that we also had no sex life. I was in my 20s and really a handsome young man. And I was out there with a brand new car in a suit all day long, going from one doctor's office to the next as a pharmaceutical salesman and into hospitals and into pharmacies. And I was around, and you know, this was in the 70s, and there were women around, and, you know, this was like free love era, and boy, I mean to tell you, there was never a day that I did not have temptation, and particularly because I was, you know, had been cut off at home. That's no fun. I promise you right now that in your 20s, to be cut off at home and have no, and completely, I mean, it was awful. So I gained an extra 10 pounds to try and make myself a little less attractive because I didn't want to have to constantly do the battle. I didn't gain 80 pounds because I wasn't, you know, my vanity out did the rest of it, so I couldn't do that. But I do remember that whole thing of trying to, at some level, make myself less attractive so I did not have to deal with that constant thing. And every time a situation would come up, I would see the look on my little girl's face and think, I'm not gonna betray them. Now, you know, I stayed married to that lady for another 10 years. It never really changed, and it got worse, and there was all kinds of stuff and involved in it. And, you know, all of these years later, there's still bad blood, not from me to her, but from her to me. And, you know, and it was, I mean, you know, she got involved with somebody and stuff like that. It was really, really sad. But I do remember that whole thing of living, trying to not look good so that I would not be as attractive, as a self-protection. I, you know what? I hadn't thought of that in years.
It's true.
I'd still like to have, right now, I'll tell you what, I'd love to lose the 10. You know?
They can have that 10 back. And you have that 10 back, and I'll just, you know, whatever. But it's something that did not sit well with me. And I wonder about people, and I know that we have people that are listening, who do the same thing. And I think it affects your self-image also.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, nobody likes to be overweight.
I think we've been stood up here with our guests, so we're just going to talk about the issues about this right now. And,
well, I've struggled with it most of my life. Well, not most of my life, but since I was 36, so I have some understanding.
Well, then good. This is, you know, this is something that, you know, that
when
it's
my
an
husband
area
left,
that
I
have less understanding. And, you know, I think that this is really something that's more with women than it is with men.
Yeah.
But I don't know that. I mean, I don't have any statistics on that. I just have,
we have
kind of an anecdotal of just looking at people in our society. And I do know that many just, you know, and it becomes a habit also.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, at the end of the day, well, I have to have my bowl of ice cream before I go to bed. Or, you know, I have to have, you know, 10 Oreos and a glass of milk before I go to bed, obviously. I mean, that's just part of my routine. And, of course, you know, you just get that
creeping obesity that just comes as a result of it, without ever, you know, without ever putting the stuff together. And of course, we, you know, half the world is starving, and the other half are falling off their diet. So, you know, this is kind of a global problem also. But at any rate, as far as the self-esteem and all of that, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, especially if you take pride in your appearance, you know, that's not a real issue for some people, but it is for others. They find a lot of self-esteem in the way they look. When my husband left, I gained 50 pounds, like, real quick, within 4 or 5 months. I didn't want anybody to ask me out. And I did everything I could to make myself unattractive. I'm a clothes horse. I love clothes. I love shoes. I love bags. Most of the time, I wouldn't even brush my hair. I went into a horrible depression. But this comes from staying in a marriage that was not good and losing my identity. I wasn't Stacey Hannah anymore. I was Matt's wife. And when Matt was gone, I didn't know who I was or where I was or didn't care. And I certainly did not want to go out with another man. I was just trying to get through the day. And there's nothing, when you're upset, there's nothing. You know, I've heard alcoholics say that drink just soothes your soul. I've eaten things that I didn't even like compulsively. I'm a very picky eater, and for this to occur in my life is mind-boggling. And sometimes one thinks one has overcome something, and then there's a little crack in your shell, and you start to feel good again, and you start to rejoin life, and the little crack occurs, and there you are starting out all over again, wondering, oh, gosh, what happened? And that's when you have to really start letting God control your thoughts and realizing that you got to pick yourself up one more time and get through it. But it destroys your self-esteem. Who wants to look in the mirror? I mean, in my mind, I see myself when I was 30 and I was cute and attractive. And I look at this person and it's like, oh, who is that? It is just, it's awful. But boy, does it ever reveal areas that need to be cleaned up and let God, you know, you got to confess it and then let God wash it clean with the blood of Jesus. And I don't think that there will be a day go by that people who struggle with that will really, really be free any other way except letting him do it. And you can't compromise. You can't take that, just like with an alcoholic, you can't take that one little drink. You can't take that one little bite. And you learn to satisfy and eat to live instead of living to eat.
Boy, if that isn't the key to everything. And unfortunately, when you gain a bunch of weight, your body becomes used to that being that size, and it kind of sets its own trigger so that, well, this is how big I'm supposed to be. And, you know, then when you try and shed those pounds, it takes a long time for your metabolism and for your body essentially to say, okay, I'm okay with this new, smaller, more svelte me than, you know, with the larger one. And it's a big deal. And
you,
we have a lot of
deal.
People who just, I mean, I want you to go ahead and talk a little bit more about this, because quite honestly, you know, I'm learning as much as hosting in this particular program, because I know about some of the things really well. I'm, you know, as well as anybody around. But about this area, not so much. Not so much.
When my marriage started to go down the tubes And I became seriously depressed. It's when it starts after the birth of my second child. And I hated it. I hated the way I looked. I hated the way I felt. I hated the negative remarks that my ex-husband said to me. And I went so far as to have a very, very serious surgery that's no longer performed because so many people died from it. And I almost died. I had a 10% chance of surviving. And to be quite honest with you, I didn't want to survive. I did not want to live overweight ever again. I would rather have died. And I guess God intervened in my life.
I think a lot of people feel that way.
I do too. I mean, if people will really be honest, that's the way I felt. And my ex-husband lied to me and said if I would have the reconstructive surgery that we would get marriage counseling and he would stop drinking and all of this stuff. Well, he never had any intentions of doing that. As soon as I had the surgery and came home from the hospital, he took every opportunity he could to show me just how much he wasn't going to do it. And he said he lied because he didn't want my death on his conscience. Well, like you're Irish, I'm Irish Indian. And I mean rage welled up inside of me to where I wanted to kill him. And the next 2 years, we hated each other. I mean hated. I've never hated so much in my life. And finally, you know,
were you still living together at the time?
Yeah, we were. We sure were.
You hated him and he hated you.
I beg your pardon?
You hated him and he hated you.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I can't tell you how much I hated him. However, it was over, and I lost the weight again. But then I gained all the weight back because I was scared to death of being in the dating scene. I was a paralegal, and I had many opportunities. And it scared the living daylights out of me. So when you're overweight, you don't feel like going out and socializing in a dating atmosphere. And it destroys your self-esteem, everything about it. To me, it's more destructive than alcoholism or even drug addiction. And it's real hard because people don't understand it. They say, well, just don't eat that. Well, guess what? That's the only time I feel alive is when I'm eating that. There's comfort, and it produces those endorphins, and I like it. Then you look in the mirror half an hour later, and you hate yourself because you didn't have any control.
Well, it's like so many other things. It's very easy when you don't have the issue or the problem, if you're a true fan, to cast stones and aspersions and all the rest of it. The saddest part is when you don't look good based on having eaten too much for a long period of time, getting back on track and staying on track becomes a lifelong commitment. You can't give it up at all.
No. And Jeff, what are the statistics about staying sober for a long period of time and then a major event happens? How often do alcoholics go back to the original behavior?
You know, it's really funny. I was at Starbucks yesterday writing, I just finished this project with Robert McGee where we wrote the Search for Reality. And as I told him and you and everybody else, I'm just going to write a little, a little novel afterwards because it's nice to just, when you do something that's just so cerebral like that was, to do a project that just is kind of fun and light and cheesy. And that's what I'm doing. At any rate, I was sitting there and doing my work and, just having a cappuccino.
And this woman came up, said, "Hi, Jack, how are you?" And, you know, I turned and looked at her, and it was a friend of mine that I had known for many, many years through AA, and I hadn't seen her in a while. So I, you know, I got up and I gave her a hug, and there were just the two of us there, and you know, after talking about this, that, and the other, she had just had a, you know, taken a trip to the Orient, or I guess we shouldn't say Orient anymore. I don't mean that to be, derisive to the Far East, and had just come back, and we talked a little bit about that, and then I said to her, at the end of May, I will pick up my 20-year chip for 20 years of continuous sobriety. And she said, "Oh, that's wonderful, Jack." She said, "I dropped out of the program a year ago." Now, when somebody says that they drop out of the program, that doesn't mean they stop going to meetings.
Right.
They've started drinking again. And
right.
She said, "I think I'll be okay. And I, you know, I'm just, I watch it and everything. But I had that time when, you know, when I drank too much. But, you know, that all of the issues about the surrounding that are gone, and I'll be okay." Now that is exactly what people who are alcoholics do, who have some time behind them, and then they decide, you know, I don't like that I'm at home on Saturday night and no fun. So I'm going to go sit at a bar and I'll just have one and I'll talk to some people and I'll have fun. And they go and they have to drink and they talk to some people and they have some fun. And they say, "What have I been missing out on life? I don't really have a problem with alcohol, and I'll just do this. Every once in a while, I'll just go do that." And it works for a short period of time, and then it doesn't. And the decline into deep addiction.
Is it a rapid decline?
Oh, yeah, it's a rapid decline. People can fool themselves for a while. Some people, you know, they're right back where they started, 2 days later, and some a week, you know, some a month. Sometimes they can go 6 months, maybe even a year, but eventually they will all spiral down. That's because once you develop you're addicted to what you're allergic to, and what happens is once that gets a hold of you, then you're way down in the pits, and you feel like you can't do any better because you tried, you know, you tried recovery and it didn't work for you. And so then, you know, people blame God. I did my best, God, and you let me down. That's always the answer. God let them down.
Right.
Which, of course, he doesn't. But that's just the way that one works. Now, you know, I'd like to say that, you know, I was very upbeat with her, and I did not do anything, you know, that would be in any way scolding her or derisive or anything. I just wouldn't do that. But I told her, she said, "Well, you know, if things get bad, I feel like I'm welcome." I said, "Listen, the thing that I like about AA sometimes better than church is that they always welcome sinners. As tough as that might sound, it absolutely is true. At any rate, we're out of time, and our little guest never bothered to call. I don't know what happened to her. She was all set and really thrilled about it, but, you know, we did talk, about the issue of overeating and the addictive part of it, and we're going to continue with that because it's a big one. And, you know, this the way our society is going, we're going to have lots more people need a lot more help in recovery. So let me just say this. Thank you, Stacy, and God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Good night.
Night.